Don't even start with that. For a moment, he thought she was done, but then she spat. Killing him, Kaol, would be a mercy. Killing him would be a gift. I can't make the shot, Nezrin said again, a bit more sharply. Touch him, Kaol said, and I'll make sure those bastards down there find Adian. Nezrin silently turned to them, slackening her bow. It was the only card he had to play, even if it made him a bastard as well. The wrath Kaol found in Aelin's eyes was world-ending. You bring my court into this, Kaol? Aelin said with lethal softness. And I don't care what you were to me, or what you have done to help me. You betray them. You hurt them. And I don't care how long it takes, or how far you go. I'll burn you and your god's damned kingdom to ash. Then you'll learn just how much of a monster I can be. Too far. He'd gone too far. We're not enemies, Nezrin said. And though her face was calm, her eyes darted between them. We have enough shit to worry about tomorrow. And right now. She pointed with her arrow toward the square. 5 minutes until 6. Do we go down there? To public, Aelin said. Don't risk exposing yourself. There's another patrol a quarter mile away headed in this direction. Of course she knew about it.
Again, Kaol said. Why are you here?
She just snuck up on them, with far too much ease. Aelin studied Nezrin a bit too thoughtfully. How good's your accuracy, Falik? I don't miss, Nezrin said. Aelin's teeth gleamed. My kind of woman. She gave Kaol a knowing smile. And he knew. He knew that she was aware of the history between them. And she didn't particularly care. He couldn't tell whether or not it was a relief. I'm debating ordering Aerobin's men off the mission tomorrow, Aelin said. Those turquoise eyes fixed on Nezrin's face, on her hands, on her bow. I want Falik on wall duty instead.
No,
Kaol said. Are you her keeper? He didn't deign to respond. Aelin crooned. I thought so. But Nezrin wouldn't be on wall duty, and neither would he. He was too recognizable to risk being close to the palace, and Aelin and her piece-of-shit master had apparently decided he'd be better off running interference along the border of the slums, making sure the coast was clear.
Nezrin has her orders already.
In the square, people began swearing at the three men who were watching the clock with pale, gaunt faces. Some of the onlookers even threw bits of spoiled food at them. Maybe this city did deserve Aelin Galathinius's flames. Maybe Kaol deserved to burn, too. He turned back to the women. Shit, Aelin swore. And he looked behind him in time to see the guards shove the first victim, a sobbing middle-aged man, toward the block, using the pommels of their swords to knock his knees out from under him. They weren't waiting until 6. Another prisoner, also middle-aged, began shaking, and a dark stain spread across the front of his pants. Gods. Kaol's muscles were locked, and even Nezrin couldn't draw her bow fast enough as the axe rose. A thud silenced the city square. People applauded. Applauded. The sound covered the second thud of the man's head falling and rolling away. Then Kaol was in another room, in the castle that had once been his home, listening to the thud of flesh and bone on marble. Red mist coating the air, Dorian screaming. Oathbreaker, liar, traitor. Kaol was all of those things now, but not to Dorian. Never to his true king.
Take out the clock tower in the garden,
he said. The words barely audible. He felt Aelin turn toward him.
And magic will be free. It was a spell. 3 towers, all built of wordstone. Take out one, and magic is free.
She glanced northward without so much as a blink of surprise, as though she could see all the way to the glass castle. Thank you, she murmured. That was it.
It's for Dorian's sake.
Perhaps cruel, perhaps selfish, but true.
The king is expecting you tomorrow,
he went on.
What if he stops caring about the public knowing and unleashes his magic on you? You know what happened with Dorian.
She scanned the roof tiles, as if reading her mental map of the celebration, the map he'd given her. Then she swore. He could lay traps for me, and Adian. With the word marks, he could write out spells on the floor or in the doors, keyed to mirror Adian. And we would be helpless. The exact same way I trapped that thing in the library. Shit! She breathed. Shit! Gripping her slackened bow, Nezrin said, Brello told us the king has his best men escorting Adian from the dungeons to the hall. Perhaps spelling those areas, too. If he spells them. If is too big a gamble to make. And it's too late to change our plans, Aelin said. If I had those goddamned books, I could maybe find some sort of protection for me and Adian. Some spell. But I won't have enough time tomorrow to grab them from my old rooms. The gods know if they're even still there.
They're not,
Kaol said. Aelin's brows flicked up.
Because I have them. I grabbed them when I left the castle.
Aelin pursed her lips in what he could have sworn was reluctant appreciation. We don't have much time. She began climbing over the roof and out of sight. There are two prisoners left, she clarified. And I think those streamers would look better with some Vog blood on them anyway. Nezrin remained on the rooftop while Aelin went to another across the square, faster than Kaol had thought possible. That left him on street level. He hurried as swiftly as he could through the crowd, spotting his three men gathered near the other edge of the platform. Ready. The clock struck six just as Kaol positioned himself, after making sure two more of his men were waiting down a narrow alley. Just as the guards finally cleared away the body of the first prisoner and dragged forward the second, the man was sobbing, begging them as he was forced to kneel in the puddle of his friend's blood. The executioner lifted his axe. And a dagger, courtesy of Aelin Galathinius, went clean through the executioner's throat. Black blood sprayed, some onto the streamers, as Aelin had promised. Before the guards could shout, Nezrin opened fire from the other direction. That was all the distraction Kaol needed, as he and his men surged toward the platform amid the panicking, fleeing crowd. Nezrin and Aelin had both fired again by the time he hit the stage, the wood treacherously slick with blood. He grabbed the two prisoners and roared at them to run, run, run. His men were blade to blade with the guards as he rushed the stumbling prisoners down the steps and into the safety of the alley, and the rebels waiting beyond. Block after block they fled, leaving the chaos of the square behind, until they hit the Avery, and Kaol set about attaining them a boat. Nezrin found him leaving the docks an hour later. Unharmed, but splattered with dark blood.
What happened?
Pandemonium, Nezrin said, scanning the river under the setting sun. Everything fine? He nodded.
And you?
Both of us are fine. A kindness, he thought with a flicker of shame, that she knew he couldn't bring himself to ask about Aelin. Nezrin turned away, heading back in the direction she'd come.
Where are you going?
He asked. To wash and change, and then go tell the family of the man who died. It was protocol, even if it was horrible. Better to have the families genuinely mourn than risk being looked on any longer as rebel sympathizers.
You don't have to do that,
he said.
I'll send one of the men.
I'm a city guard, she said plainly. My presence won't be unexpected. And besides, she said, her eyes glinting with her usual faint amusement, you yourself said I don't exactly have a line of suitors waiting outside my father's house. So what else do I have to do with myself tonight?
Tomorrow's an important day,
he said, even as he cursed himself for the words he'd spat the other night. An ass. That's what he'd been, even if she'd never let on that it bothered her. I was just fine before you came along, Kaol, she said. Tired, possibly bored. I know my limits. I'll see you tomorrow. But he said,
why go to the families yourself?
Nezrin's dark eyes shifted toward the river.
Because it reminds me of what I have to lose if I'm caught, or if we fail.
Night fell, and Aelin knew she was being followed as she stalked from rooftop to rooftop. Right now, even hours later, hitting the street was the most dangerous thing she could possibly do, given how pissed off the guards were after she and the rebels had stolen their prisoners right out from under them. And she knew that because she'd been listening to them curse and hiss for the past hour, as she trailed a patrol of black-uniformed guards on the route she'd noted the night before. Along the docks, then keeping to the shadows off the main drag of taverns and brothels in the slums, and then near, but keeping a healthy distance from, the Riverside Shadow Market. Interesting to learn how their route did or didn't change when chaos erupted, what hidey holes they rushed to, what sort of formations they used, what streets were left unmonitored when all hell broke loose. As it would tomorrow, with Adian. But Aerobin's claims had been right, matching the maps Kaol and Nezrin had made, too. She'd known that if she told Kaol why she'd shown up at the execution, he would get in the way somehow. Send Nezrin to follow her, perhaps. She needed to see how skilled they were. All the parties that would be so crucial in tomorrow's events. And then see this. Just as Aerobin had told her, each guard wore a thick black ring, and they moved with jerks and twitches that made her wonder how well the demons squatting inside their bodies were adjusting. Their leader, a pale man with night-dark hair, moved the most fluidly, like ink in water, she thought. She had left them to stalk toward another part of the city, while she continued on toward where the craftsman district jutted out into the curve of the Avery, until all was silent around her, and the scent of those rotting corpses faded away. Atop the roof of a glass-blowing warehouse, the tiles still warm from the heat of the day or the massive furnaces inside, Aelin surveyed the empty alley below. The infernal spring rain began again, tinkling on the sloped roof, the many chimneys. Magic, Kaol had told her how to free it. So easy, and yet a monumental task, in need of careful planning. After tomorrow, though, if she survived, she'd set about doing it. She shimmied down a drainpipe on the side of a crumbling brick building, splashing down a bit too loudly in a puddle of what she hoped was rain. She whistled as she strolled down the empty alley, a jaunty little tune she'd overheard at one of the slum's many taverns. Still, she was honestly a little surprised that she got nearly halfway down the alley, before a patrol of the king's guards stepped into her path, their swords like quicksilver in the dark. The commander of the patrol, the demon inside him, looked at her, and smiled as though it already knew what her blood tasted like. Aelin grinned right back at him, flicking her wrists and sending the blades shooting out of her suit. Hello, gorgeous. Then she was upon them, slicing and twirling and ducking. Five guards were dead before the others could even move. The blood they leaked wasn't red, though. It was black, and slid down the sides of her blades, dense and shining as oil. The stench, like curdled milk and vinegar, hit her as hard as the clashing of their swords. The reek grew, overpowering the lingering smoke from the glass factories around them, worsening as Aelin dodged the demon's blow and swiped low. The man's stomach opened up like a festering wound, and black blood and the gods knew what else sloshed onto the street. Disgusting. Almost as bad as what wafted from the sewer grate at the other end of the alley, already open. Already oozing that too familiar darkness. The rest of the patrol closed in. Her wrath became a song in her blood as she ended them. When blood and rain lay in puddles on the broken cobblestones, when Aelin stood in a field of fallen men, she began slicing. Head after head tumbled away. Then she leaned against the wall, waiting, counting. They did not rise. Aelin stalked from the alley, kicking shut the sewer grate, and vanished into the rainy night. Dawn broke, the day clear and warm. Aelin had been up half the night scouring the books Kaol had saved, including her old friend, The Walking Dead. Reciting what she'd learned in the quiet of her apartment, Aelin donned the clothes Aerobin had sent over, checking and rechecking that there were no surprises, and everything was where she needed it to be. She let each step, each reminder of her plan, anchor her, keep her from dwelling too long on what would come when the festivities began. And then she went to save her cousin. Chapter 15. Adian Ashriver was ready to die. Against his will, he'd recovered over the past 2 days, the fever breaking after sunset last night. He was strong enough to walk, albeit slowly, as they escorted him to the dungeon's washroom, where they chained him down to wash and scrub him, and even risked shaving him, despite his best efforts to slit his own throat on the razor. It appeared that they wanted him presentable for the court when they cut off his head with his own blade, the Sword of Orinth. After cleaning his wounds, they shoved him into pants and a loose white shirt, yanked back his hair, and dragged him up the stairs. Guards with dark uniforms flanked him 3 deep on both sides, 4 in front and behind, and every door and exit had one of the bastards posted by it. He was too drained from dressing to provoke them into putting a sword through him. So he let them lead him through the towering doors into the ballroom. Red and gold banners hung from the rafters. Springtime blossoms covered every table. And an archway of hothouse roses had been crafted over the dais from which the royal family would watch the festivities before his execution. The windows and doors beyond the platform where he would be killed opened onto one of the gardens. A guard stationed every other foot, others positioned in the garden itself. If the king wanted to set a trap for Aelin, he certainly hadn't bothered to be very subtle about it. It was civilized of them, Adian realized, as he was shoved up to the wooden steps of the platform to give him a stool to sit on. At least he wouldn't have to lounge on the floor like a dog while he watched them all pretend that they weren't here just to see his head roll. And a stool, he realized with grim satisfaction, would make a good enough weapon when the time came. So Adian let them chain him in the shackles anchored to the floor of the platform. Let them put the Sword of Orinth on display a few feet behind him, its scarred bone pommel glinting in the morning light. It was just a matter of finding the right moment to meet the end of his own choosing. Chapter 16. The demon made him sit on a dais, on a throne beside a crowned woman who had not noticed that the thing using his mouth wasn't the person who had been born of her flesh. To his other side lounged the man who controlled the demon inside him. And in front of him, the ballroom was full of tittering nobility who could not see that he was still in here, still screaming. The demon had broken a little farther through the barrier today, and it now looked through his eyes with an ancient glittering malice. It was starved for this world. Perhaps the world deserved to be devoured by the thing. Maybe it was that traitorous thought alone that had caused such a hole to rip in the barrier between them. Maybe it was winning. Maybe it had already won. So he was forced to sit on that throne, and speak with words that were not his own, and share his eyes with something from another realm, who gazed at his sunny world with ravenous, eternal hunger. The costume itched like hell. The paint all over her didn't help. Most of the important guests had arrived in the days preceding the party, but those who dwelled inside the city or in the outlying foothills now formed a glittering line stretching through the massive front doors. Guards were posted there, checking invitations, asking questions, peering into faces none too keen to be interrogated. The entertainers, vendors, and help, however, were ordered to use one of the side entrances. That was where Aelin had found Madame Florine and her troop of dancers, clad in costumes of black tulle and silk and lace, like liquid night in the mid-morning sun. Shoulders back, core tight, arms loose at her sides, Aelin eased into the middle of the flock. With her hair dyed a ruddy shade of brown and her face coated in the heavy cosmetics the dancers all wore, she blended in well enough that none of the others looked her way. She focused entirely on her role of trembling novice, on looking more interested in how the other dancers perceived her than in the 6 guards stationed at the small wooden door in the side of the stone wall. The castle hallway beyond was narrow. Good for daggers, bad for swords. and deadly for these dancers if she got into trouble. If Aerobin had indeed betrayed her. Head down, Aelin subtly monitored the first test of trust. The chestnut-haired Florine walked along her line of dancers like an admiral aboard a ship. Aging but beautiful, Florine's every movement was layered with a grace that Aelin herself had never been able to replicate, no matter how many lessons she'd had with her while growing up. The woman had been the most celebrated dancer in the Empire, and since her retirement, she remained its most valued teacher. Instructor Overlord, Aelin had called her, in the years that she'd trained under the woman, learning the most fashionable dances and ways to move and hone her body. Florine's hazel eyes were on the guards ahead, as she paused beside Aelin, a frown on her thin lips.
"You still need to work on your posture," the woman said.
Aelin met Florine's sidelong gaze.
"It's an honor to be an understudy for you, madam. I do hope Gillian soon recovers from her illness."
The guards waved through what looked to be a troop of jugglers, and they inched forward.
"You look in good enough spirits," Florine murmured.
Aelin made a show of ducking her head, curling in her shoulders, and willing a blush to rise in her cheeks. The new understudy, bashful at the compliments of her mistress.
"Considering where I was 10 months ago?"
Florine sniffed, and her gaze lingered on the thin bands of scars across Aelin's wrists that even the painted whorls couldn't conceal. They'd raised the top of the dancer's open-backed costumes. But even so, and even with the body paint, the upper ends of her tattoo-covered scars peeked through.
"If you think I had anything to do with the events that led up to that..."
Aelin's words were barely louder than the crunch of silk shoes on gravel, as she said,
"You'd already be dead if you had."
It wasn't a bluff. When she'd written her plans on that ship, Florine's name had been one that she'd written down, and then crossed out, after careful consideration.
Aelin continued, "I trust you made the proper adjustments?"
Not just the slight change in the costumes to accommodate the weapons and supplies Aelin would need to smuggle in. All paid for by Aerobin, of course. No, the big surprises would come later.
"A bit late to be asking that, isn't it?"
Madame Florine purred, the dark jewels at her neck and ears glimmering.
"You must trust me a great deal to have even appeared. I trust that you like getting paid more than you like the king."
Aerobin had given a massive sum to pay off Florine. She kept an eye on the guards as she said,
"And since the royal theater was shut down by His Imperial Majesty, I trust we both agree that what was done to those musicians was a crime as unforgivable as the massacres of the slaves in Endovir and Calicalla."
She knew she'd gambled correctly when she saw agony flicker in Florine's eyes.
"Peter was my friend,"
Florine whispered, the color leaching from her tan cheeks.
"There was no finer conductor, no greater ear. He made my career. He helped me establish all this."
She waved a hand to encompass the dancers, the castle, the prestige she'd acquired.
"I miss him."
There was nothing calculated, nothing cold when Aelin put a hand over her own heart.
"I will miss going to hear him conduct the Stygian suite every autumn. I will spend the rest of my life knowing that I may never again hear finer music. Never again experience a shred of what I felt sitting in that theater while he conducted."
Madame Florine wrapped her arms around herself. Despite the guards ahead, despite the task that neared with every tick of the clock, it took Aelin a moment to be able to speak again. But that hadn't been what made Aelin agree to Aerobin's plan, to trust Florine. 2 years ago, finally free of Aerobin's leash, but nearly beggared thanks to paying her debts, Aelin had continued to take lessons with Florine not only to keep current with the popular dances for her work, but also to keep flexible and fit. Florine had refused to take her money. Moreover, after each lesson, Florine had allowed Aelin to sit at the pianoforte by the window and play until her fingers were sore, since she had been forced to leave her beloved instrument at the Assassin's Keep. Florine had never mentioned it, never made her feel like it was charity, but it had been a kindness when Aelin had desperately needed one. Aelin said under her breath,
You've memorized the preparations for you and your girls?
Those who wish to flee may come on the ship Aerobin hired. I have made space for all, just in case. If they're stupid enough to stay in Rifthold, then they deserve their fate.
Aelin hadn't risked being seen meeting with Florine until now, and Florine hadn't even dared to pack her belongings for fear of being discovered. She would take only what she could carry with her to the performance. Money, jewels, and flee to the docks the moment chaos erupted. There was a good chance she wouldn't make it out of the palace, and neither would her girls. Despite the escape plans provided by Kaol and Brullo and the cooperation of the kinder guards. Aelin found herself saying,
"Thank you."
Florine's mouth quirked to the side. "Now there's something you never learned from your master." The dancers at the front of the line reached the guards, and Florine sighed loudly and strutted toward them, bracing her hands on her narrow hips. Power and grace lining every step closer to the black-uniformed guards studying a long list. One by one, he looked over the dancers, comparing them with the list he bore, checking rosters, detailed ones. But thanks to Ress having broken into the barracks last night and adding a fake name along with her description, Aelin would be on the list. They inched closer, Aelin keeping toward the back of the group to buy time to note details.
Gods, this castle. The same in every possible way, but different.
Or maybe it was she who was different. One by one, the dancers were allowed between the blank-faced guards and hurried down the narrow castle hallway, giggling and whispering to one another. Aelin rose up onto her toes to study the guards at the doors, no more than the novice scrunching her face in impatient curiosity. Then she saw them. Written across the threshold stones in dark paint were word marks. They'd been beautifully rendered, as though merely decorative, but they must be at every door, every entrance. Sure enough, even the windows a level up had small dark symbols on them, no doubt keyed to Aelin Galathinius, to alert the king to her presence or trap her in place long enough to be captured. A dancer elbowed Aelin in the stomach to get her to stop leaning on her shoulder to peer over their heads. Aelin gaped at the girl, and then let out an oomph of pain. The dancer glared over her shoulder, mouthing to shut up. Aelin burst into tears. Loud, blubbering, tears. The dancers froze, the one ahead of her stepping back, glancing to either side.
"That hurt!"
Aelin said, clutching her stomach.
"I didn't do anything," the woman hissed.
Aelin kept crying. Ahead, Florine ordered her dancers to step aside, and then her face was in Aelin's.
"What in the name of every god in the realm is this nonsense about?"
Aelin pointed a shaking finger at the dancer.
"She hit me."
Florine whirled on the wide-eyed dancer who was already proclaiming her innocence. Then followed a series of accusations, insults, and more tears. Now from the dancer, weeping over her surely ruined career.
Water!
Aelin blubbered to Florine.
"I need a glass of water!"
The guards had been pushing toward them. Aelin squeezed Florine's arm hard.
Now!
Florine's eyes sparked, and she faced the guards who approached, barking her demands. Aelin held her breath, waiting for the strike, the slap. But there was one of Ress's friends, one of Kaol's friends, wearing a red flower pinned to his breast, as she'd asked, running off to get water. Exactly where Kaol had said he'd be, just in case something went wrong. Aelin clung to Florine until the water appeared, a bucket and ladle. The best the man could come up with. He wisely didn't meet her gaze. With a little sob of thanks, Aelin grabbed both from his hands. They were shaking slightly. She gave Florine a subtle nudge with her foot, urging her forward.
"Come with me," seethed Florine, dragging her to the front of the line. "I've had enough of this idiocy, and you've nearly wrecked your makeup."
Careful not to spill the water, Aelin allowed Florine to pull her to the stone-faced guard at the doors.
"My foolish, useless understudy, Diana,"
she said to the guard with flawless steel in her voice, unfazed by the black-eyed demon looking out at her. The man studied the list in his hands, scanning, scanning, and crossed off a name. Aelin took a shivering sip of water from the ladle, then dunked it back into the bucket. The guard looked once more at Aelin, and she willed her lower lip to wobble, the tears to well again as the demon inside devoured her with his eyes, as if all these lovely dancers were dessert.
"Get in,"
the man grunted, jerking his chin to the hall behind him. With a silent prayer, Aelin stepped toward the word marks written over the threshold stones, and tripped, sending the bucket of water spraying over the marks. She wailed as she hit the ground, knees barking in genuine pain, and Florine was instantly upon her, demanding she stop being so clumsy and such a crybaby, and then shoving her in, shoving her over the ruined marks, and into the glass castle. Chapter 17. Once Florine and the rest of the dancers were allowed in, they were all stuffed down a narrow servants' hallway. In a matter of moments, the door at the far end would open into the side of the ballroom, and they would flutter out like butterflies. Black, glittering butterflies, here to perform the Handmaidens of Death dance from one of the more popular symphonies. They weren't stopped or questioned by anyone else, though the guards in every hall watched them like hawks, and not the shape-shifting Fae Prince kind. So few of Kaol's men were present. No sign of Ress or Brollo. But everyone was where Kaol had promised they would be, based on Ress and Brollo's information. A platter of honey-roasted ham with crackling sage was carried past on a servant's shoulder, and Aelin tried not to appreciate it, to savor the sense of the food of her enemy, even if it was damn fine food. Platter after platter went by, hauled by red-faced servants, no doubt winded from the trek up from the kitchens. Trout with hazelnuts, crisped asparagus, tubs of freshly whipped cream, pear tarts, meat pies. Aelin cocked her head, watching the line of servants. A half-smile grew on her face. She waited for the servants to return with empty hands on their return journey to the kitchens. Finally, the door opened again, and a slim servant in a crisp white apron filed into the dim hall, the loose strands of her inky hair falling out of her braid, as she hurried to retrieve the next tray of pear tarts from the kitchen. Aelin kept her face blank, disinterested, as Nezrin Falik glanced her way. Those dark, upturned eyes narrowed slightly. Surprise or nerves, Aelin couldn't tell. But before she could decide how to deal with it, one of the guards signaled to Florine that it was time. Aelin kept her head down, even as she felt the demon within the man rake its attention over her and the others. Nezrin was gone, vanished down the stairs, when Aelin turned back. Florine strode down the line of dancers waiting by the door, her hands clasped behind her.
"Backs straight, shoulders back, necks uplifted. You are light, you are air, you are grace. Do not disappoint me."
Florine took up the basket of black glass flowers she'd had her steadiest dancer carry in, each exquisite bloom flickering like an ebony diamond in the dim hall light.
"If you break these before it is time to throw them down, you are finished. They cost more than you're worth, and there are no extras."
One by one, she handed the flowers down the line, each of them sturdy enough not to snap in the next few minutes. Florine reached Aelin, the basket empty.
"Watch them and learn," she said loud enough for the demon guard to hear, and put a hand on Aelin's shoulder,
ever the consoling teacher. The other dancers, now shifting on their feet, rolling their heads and shoulders, didn't look in her direction. Aelin nodded demurely, as if trying to hide bitter tears of disappointment, and ducked out of line to stand at Florine's side. Trumpets blasted in through the cracks around the door, and the crowd cheered loud enough to make the floor rumble.
"I peeked into the great hall,"
Florine said so quietly Aelin could barely hear her,
"to see how the general is faring. He is gaunt and pale, but alert, ready for you."
Aelin went still.
I always wondered where Erebin found you,
Florine murmured, staring at the door as if she could see through it.
Why he took such pains to break you to his will, more so than all the others.
The woman closed her eyes for a moment, and when she opened them, steel gleamed there.
When you shatter the chains of this world and forge the next, remember that art is as vital as food to a kingdom. Without it, a kingdom is nothing, and will be forgotten by time. I have amassed enough money in my miserable life to not need any more. So you will understand me clearly when I say that wherever you set your throne, no matter how long it takes, I will come to you, and I will bring music and dancing.
Aelin swallowed hard. Before she could say anything, Florine left her standing at the back of the line and strolled to the door. She paused before it, looking down the line at each dancer. She spoke only when her eyes met Aelin's.
Give our king the performance he deserves.
Florine opened the door, flooding the hallway with light and music and the scent of roasted meats. The other dancers sucked in a collective breath and sprang forward one by one, waving those dark glass flowers overhead. As she watched them go, Aelin willed the blood in her veins into black fire. Aedion. Her focus was on Aedion, not the tyrant seated at the front of the room, the man who had murdered her family, murdered Marion, murdered her people. If these were her last moments, then at least she would go down fighting to the sound of exquisite music. It was time. One breath, another. She was the heir of fire. She was fire, and light, and ash, and embers. She was Aelin Fireheart, and she bowed for no one and nothing, save the crown that was hers by blood and survival and triumph. Aelin squared her shoulders and slipped into the bejeweled crowd. Aedion had been watching the guards in the hours he'd been chained to the stool, and had figured out who best to attack first, who favored a certain side or leg, who might hesitate when faced with the Wolf of the North, and, most importantly, who was impulsive and stupid enough to finally run him through despite the king's command. The performances had begun, drawing the attention of the crowd that had been shamelessly gawking at him. And as the 2 dozen women floated and leaped and twirled into the wide space between the dais and his execution platform, for a moment Aedion felt bad for interrupting. These women had no cause to be caught up in the bloodshed he was about to unleash. It did seem fitting, though, that their sparkling costumes were of darkest black, accented with silver. Death's handmaidens, he realized. That was who they portrayed. It was as much a sign as anything. Perhaps the dark-eyed Silba would offer him a kind death instead of a cruel one at the blood-drenched hands of Hellas. Either way, he found himself smiling. Death was death. The dancers were tossing fistfuls of black powder, coating the floor with it, representing ashes of the fallen, probably. One by one, they made pretty little spins and bowed before the king and his son. Time to move. The king was distracted by a uniformed guard whispering in his ear. The prince was watching the dancers with bored disinterest, and the queen was chatting with whichever courtier she favored that day. The crowd clapped and cooed over the unfolding performance. They'd all come in their finery. Such careless wealth. The blood of an empire had paid for those jewels and silks. The blood of his people. An extra dancer was moving through the crowd. Some understudy, no doubt, trying to get a better view of the performance. And he might not have thought twice about it, had she not been taller than the others. Bigger. Curvier. Her shoulders broader. She moved more heavily, as if somehow rooted innately to the earth. The light hit her, shining through the lace of the costume's sleeves to reveal swirls and whorls of markings on her skin, identical to the paint on the dancers' arms and chests, save for her back, where the paint was a little darker, a little different. Dancers like that didn't have tattoos. Before he could see more, between one breath and the next, as a cluster of ladies in massive ball gowns blocked her from sight, she vanished behind a curtained-off doorway, walking right past the guards with a sheepish smile, as if she were lost. When she emerged again not a minute later, he only knew it was her from the build, the height. The makeup was gone, and her flowing tulle skirt had disappeared. No, not disappeared, he realized, as she slipped back through the doorway without the guards so much as looking at her. The skirt had been reversed into a silken cape, its hood covering her ruddy brown hair, and she moved, moved like a swaggering man, parading for the ladies around him. Moved closer to him, to the stage. The dancers were still tossing their black powder everywhere, circling around and around, flitting their way across the marble floor. None of the guards noticed the dancer turned noble prowling toward him. One of the courtiers did, but not to cry an alarm. Instead, he shouted a name, a man's name, and the dancer in disguise turned, lifting a hand in greeting toward the man who'd called and giving a cocky grin. She wasn't just in disguise. She'd become someone else completely. Closer and closer she strutted, the music from the gallery orchestra rising into a clashing, vibrant finale, each note higher than the last, as the dancers raised their glass roses above their heads, a tribute to the king, to death. The disguised dancer stopped outside the ring of guards flanking Adian's stage, patting herself down as if checking for a handkerchief that had gone missing, muttering a string of curses. An ordinary, believable pause. No cause for alarm. The guards went back to watching the dancers. But the dancer looked up at Adian beneath lowered brows. Even disguised as an aristo man, there was wicked, vicious triumph in her turquoise and gold eyes. Behind them, across the hall, the dancers shattered their roses on the floor, and Adian grinned at his queen as the entire world went to hell. Chapter 18. It wasn't just the glass flowers that had been rigged with a reactive powder, quietly purchased by Aelin at the Shadow Market. Every bit of sparkling dust the dancers had tossed about had been full of it. And it was worth every damn silver she'd spent as smoke erupted through the room, igniting the powder they'd been scattering everywhere. The smoke was so thick she could barely see more than a foot ahead, and blended perfectly with the gray cloak that had doubled as the skirt of her costume, just as Aerobin had suggested. Screaming halted the music. Aelin was already moving for the nearby stage as the clock tower, that clock tower that would save or damn them all, struck noon. There was no black collar around Adian's neck, and that was all she needed to see, even as relief threatened to wobble her knees. Before the clock's first strike finished, she had drawn the daggers built into the bodice of her costume, all the silver thread and beading masking the steel on her, and slashed one across the throat of the nearest guard. Aelin spun and shoved him into the man closest to him, as she plunged her other blade deep into the gut of a third. Florine's voice rose above the crowd, ushering her dancers out, out, out. The second strike of the clock tower sounded, and Aelin yanked her dagger from the belly of the groaning guard, another surging at her from the smoke. The rest would go to Adian on instinct, but they'd be slowed by the crowds, and she was already close enough. The guard, one of those black-uniformed nightmares, stabbed with his sword, a direct attack to her chest. Aelin parried the thrust aside with one dagger, spinning into his exposed torso. Hot, reeking blood shot onto her hand as she shoved her other blade into his eye. He was still falling as she ran the last few feet to the wooden platform and hurled herself onto it, rolling, keeping low until she was right up under two other guards who were still trying to wave away the veils of smoke. They screamed as she disemboweled them both in two swipes. The fourth strike of the clock sounded, and there was Adian, the three guards around him impaled by shards of his stool. He was huge, even bigger up close. A guard charged for them out of the smoke, and Aelin shouted, "Duck!" before throwing her dagger at the man's approaching face. Adian barely moved fast enough to avoid the blow, and the guard's blood splattered on the shoulder of her cousin's tunic. She lunged for the chains around Adian's ankles, sheathing her remaining blade at her side. A jolt shocked through her, and blue light seared her vision as the eye flared. She didn't dare pause, not even for a heartbeat. Whatever spell the king had put on Adian's chains burned like blue fire as she sliced open her forearm with her dagger and used her blood to draw the symbols she'd memorized on the chains. Unlock. The chains thudded to the ground. Seventh strike of the clock. The screaming shifted into something louder, wilder, and the king's voice boomed over the panicking crowd. A guard rushed at them, his sword out. Another benefit of the smoke, too risky to start firing arrows. But she'd only give Aerobin credit if she got out of this alive. She unsheathed another blade, hidden in the lining of her gray cloak. The guard went down, clutching at his throat, now split ear to ear. Then she whirled to Adian, pulling the long chain of the eye from around her neck, and threw it over his head. She opened her mouth, but he gasped out, "The sword!" And that's when she noticed the blade displayed behind his stool, the sword of Orinth. Her father's blade. She'd been too focused on Adian, on the guards and the dancers, to realize what blade it was. "Stay close," was all she said, as she grabbed the sword from the stand and shoved it into his hands. She didn't let herself think too much about the weight of that blade, or about how it had even gotten there. She just grasped Adian by the wrist and raced across the platform toward the patio windows, where the crowd was shrieking and guards were trying to establish a line. The clock issued its ninth strike. She'd unlock Adian's hands as soon as they got to the garden. They didn't have another second to spend in the suffocating smoke. Adian staggered but kept upright. Close behind as she leaped off the platform into the smoke, right where Brello claimed two guards would hold their position. One died with a dagger to the spine, the other a blow to the side of the neck. She squeezed the hilts of her daggers against the slippery blood now coating them, and every inch of her. His sword gripped in both hands, Adian jumped down beside her, and his knees buckled. He was injured, but not from any wound she could see. She'd discerned as much in the moments she'd weaved through the crowd, altering her demeanor as Lysandra had instructed. The paleness of Adian's face had nothing to do with fear, nor did his shallow breaths. They'd hurt him. It made killing these men very, very easy. The crowd was bottlenecking by the patio doors, just as she had calculated. All it took was her shouting, "Fire! Fire!" and the screaming turned frantic. The crowd began shattering the windows and the glass doors, trampling one another and the guards. People grabbed buckets to douse the flames, water spraying everywhere and splashing away the word marks on the thresholds. The smoke billowed out ahead, leading the way into the garden. Aelin pushed Adian's head down as she shoved him into the mass of fleeing courtiers and servants, thrashing, squeezing, shouting, ripping at her clothes until the noontime sun blinded her. Adian hissed. Weeks in the dungeons had probably wrecked his eyes. "Just hold on to me," she said, putting his massive hand on her shoulder. He gripped her hard, his chains knocking against her as she waded through the crowd and into open, clear air beyond. The clock tower bellowed its 12th and final strike as Aelin and Adian skidded to a halt before a line of 6 guards blocking the entrance to the garden hedges. Aelin stepped out of Adian's grip, and her cousin swore as his eyes adjusted enough to see what now lay between them and escape. "Don't get in my way," she said to him, then launched herself at the guards. Rowan had taught her a few new tricks. She was a whirling cloud of death, a queen of shadows, and these men were already carrion. Slashing and ducking and twirling, Aelin gave herself completely to that killing calm, until the blood was a mist around her, and the gravel was slick with it. 4 of Kaol's men came racing up, then ran the other way. Allies or just smart, she didn't care. And when the last of those black-uniformed guards had slumped to the bloody ground, she surged for Adian. He'd been gaping, but he let out a low, dark laugh as he stumbled into a sprint beside her, into the hedges. Archers. They had to clear the archers who were sure to begin firing as soon as the smoke vanished. They dashed around and between the hedges she'd traversed dozens of times during her stay here, when she'd run every morning with Kaol.
"Faster, Adian,"
she breathed. But he was already lagging. She paused and sliced into her blood-soaked wrist with a dagger before sketching the unlocking word marks on each of his manacles. Again, light flared and burned. But then the cuff sprang open silently.
"Nice trick,"
he panted, and she yanked the chains off him. She was about to chuck the metal aside when the gravel crunched behind them. Not the guards, and not the king. It was with no small amount of horror that she found Dorian strolling toward them. Chapter 19.
"Going somewhere?"
Dorian said, his hands in the pockets of his black pants. The man who spoke those words was not her friend. She knew that before he'd even opened his mouth. The collar of his ebony tunic was unbuttoned, revealing the glimmering wordstone torque at the base of his throat.
"Unfortunately, Your Highness, we have another party to get to."
She marked the slender red maple to the right, the hedges, the glass palace towering beyond them. They were too deep in the garden to be shot at, but every wasted second was as good as signing her own death sentence, and Adian's.
"Pity,"
said the Vogue Prince inside Dorian.
"It was just getting exciting."
He struck. A wave of black lashed for her, and Adian shouted in warning. Blue flared before her, deflecting the assault from Adian, but she was shoved back a step, as if by a hard, dark wind. When the black cleared, the prince stared. Then he gave a lazy, cruel smile.
"You warded yourself. Clever, lovely human thing."
She'd spent all morning painting every inch of her body with word marks in her own blood, mixed with ink to hide the color.
"Adian, run for the wall,"
she breathed, not daring to take her eyes off the prince.
"Adian did no such thing. He's not the prince. Not anymore."
"I know, which is why you need to—"
"Such heroics," said the thing squatting in her friend. "Such foolish hope. To think you can get away."
Like an asp, he struck again with a wall of black-tainted power. It knocked her clean into Adian, who grunted in pain but set her upright. Her skin began tickling beneath her costume, as if the blood wards were flaking off with each assault. Useful, but short-lived. Precisely why she hadn't wasted them on getting into the castle. They had to get out of here, now. She shoved the chains into Adian's hands, took the sword of Orinth from him, and stepped toward the prince. Slowly, she unsheathed the blade. Its weight was flawless, and the steel shone as brightly as it had the last time she'd seen it, in her father's hands. The Vogue prince snapped another whip of power at her, and she stumbled but kept walking, even as the blood wards beneath her costume crumbled away.
"One sign, Dorian,"
she said. "Just give me one sign that you're in there." The Vogue prince laughed low and harsh, that beautiful face twisted with ancient brutality. His sapphire eyes were empty as he said,
"I am going to destroy everything you love."
She raised her father's sword in both hands, advancing still.
"You'd never do it,"
the thing said.
"Dorian,"
she repeated, her voice breaking.
"You are Dorian."
Seconds. She had seconds left to give him. Her blood dripped onto the gravel, and she let it pool there, her eyes fixed on the prince as she began tracing a symbol with her foot. The demon chuckled again.
"Not anymore."
She gazed into those eyes, at the mouth she'd once kissed, at the friend she'd once cared for so deeply, and begged,
"Just one sign, Dorian."
But there was nothing of her friend in that face. No hesitation or twinge of muscle against the attack as the prince lunged. Lunged, and then froze as he passed over the word mark she'd drawn on the ground with her foot. A quick and dirty mark to hold him. It wouldn't last for more than a few moments, But that was all she needed as he was forced to his knees, thrashing and pushing against the power. Adian quietly swore. Aelin raised the sword of Orinth over Dorian's head. One strike. Just one to cleave through flesh and bone. To spare him. The thing was roaring with a voice that didn't belong to Dorian. In a language that did not belong in this world. The mark on the ground flared, but held. Dorian looked up at her. Such hatred on his beautiful face. Such malice and rage. For Terrasen. For their future, she could do this. She could end this threat here and now. End him. On his birthday. Not a day past 20. She would suffer for it later. Grieve later. Not one more name would she etch into her flesh, she'd promised herself. But for her kingdom. The blade dipped as she decided. And impact slammed into her father's sword, knocking her off balance as Adian shouted. The arrow ricocheted into the garden, hissing against the gravel as it landed. Nezrin was already approaching, another arrow drawn, pointed at Adian. Strike the prince, and I'll shoot the general. Dorian let out a lover's laugh. You're a shit spy, Aelin snapped at her. You didn't even try to remain hidden when you watched me inside. Aerobin Hommel told the captain you were going to try to kill the prince today, Nezrin said. Put your sword down. Aelin ignored the command. Nezrin's father makes the best pear tarts in the capital. She supposed Aerobin had tried to warn her, and she'd been too distracted by everything else to contemplate the veiled message. Stupid. So profoundly stupid of her. Only seconds left before the wards failed. You lied to us, Nezrin said. The arrow remained pointed at Adian, who was sizing up Nezrin, his hands curling as if he were imagining his fingers wrapped around her throat. You and Kaol are fools, Aelin said, even as a part of her heaved in relief, even as she wanted to admit that what she'd been about to do made her a fool as well. Aelin lowered the sword to her side. The thing inside Dorian hissed at her.
You will regret this moment, girl.
Aelin just whispered.
I know.
Aelin didn't give a shit what happened to Nezrin. She sheathed the sword, grabbed Adian, and ran. Adian's breath was like shards of glass in his lungs, but the blood-covered woman, Aelin, was tugging him along, cursing at him for being so slow. The garden was enormous, and shouts rose over the hedges behind them, closing in. Then they were at a stone wall already word-marked in blood, and there were strong hands reaching down to help him up and over. He tried to tell her to go first, but she was shoving at his back and then his legs, pushing him up, as the two men atop the wall grunted with his weight. The wound in his ribs stretched and burned in agony. The world grew bright and spun as the hooded men eased him down to the quiet city street on the other side. He had to brace a hand against the wall to keep from slipping in the pooled blood of the downed royal guards beneath. He recognized none of their faces. Some still set in silent screams. There was the hiss of a body on stone, and then his cousin swung down beside him, wrapping her gray cloak around her bloody costume, slinging the hood over her blood-spattered face. She had another cloak in her hands, courtesy of the wall patrol. He could hardly stand upright as she wrapped it around him and shoved the hood over his head.
Run,
she said. The two men atop the wall remained there, bows groaning as they were drawn. No sign of the young archer from the garden. Adian stumbled, and Aelin swore, darting back to wrap an arm around his middle. And damn his strength for failing him now. He put his arm around her shoulders, leaning on her as they hurried down the too quiet residential street. Shouts were now erupting behind, accented by the whiz and thud of arrows and the bleeding of dying men.
Four blocks, she panted. Just four blocks.
That didn't seem nearly far enough away to be safe, but he had no breath to tell her. Keeping upright was task enough. The stitches in his side had split, but,
holy gods,
they'd cleared the palace grounds. A miracle, a miracle,
Hurry, you hulking ass! She barked.
Adian forced himself to focus and willed strength to his legs, to his spine. They reached a street corner bedecked in streamers and flowers, and Aelin glanced in either direction before rushing through the intersection. The clash of steel on steel and the screams of wounded men shattered through the city, setting the